This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
What is up, everybody? My name is James D. Fiore, and this is Blackball. So, sometimes you find out something, and you're like, oh my God. And that happened, I guess it would be like last Friday, when we were doing Casual Fridays, and or maybe it was the next day. I was all on shrooms. All I remember is being on shrooms and sending my next guest a track that I had done. And finding out then that he subsequently that he was a hip hop head, I just did a quick segment with him, and I was totally honest with him for the last 4 hours. So I had a guest drop out, and so it happens all the time, and sometimes you can replace them, and then sometimes you can't. And so for the last 4 hours, I was trying to replace the guest, and all of a sudden I was just like, wait a second. When we talked about hip hop on his show, it was like, oh my God, we could talk about this for hours. And I was like, hey, and the light bulb went above my head, which is why my next guest today is Ray Ruth. How you doing, buddy?
Good. How are you? Thanks good. For having
from
me.
From the Who's Got Next podcast, I should say. But yeah, is there a better cultural icebreaker than when two hip-hop heads find each other?
No.
In a sea of rockers and electronic music fans, you know?
And I find it really stupid that I never caught on that you were a hip-hop guy, because I watch your show and I'm listening to your intro again today, and I'm like, it's all the signs are there that you're a hip hop dude, but yeah. And then
except
it's always
the fashion and the I guess the way I talk. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I always, you know, I don't know. I just always knew you as the political guy, right? So I never anytime you and I are on a show together, music never really becomes a subject, right? It's always Ford this or Rogan that or whatever. So,
We talk about a lot, how we don't talk about Christianity.
Yes, that. But when you sent me the two tracks, and like I said, I was telling you on my show, my wife and I listened because she's a big hip hop head too, and we were like, I was like, this is amazing. And then when you came on my show, my whole intentions was just to ask you about your tracks. What was your inspiration? You start dropping names, the next thing I know, we're just dissecting hip hop. So it's, and that's what happens when two hip hop heads get together.
Yeah, well, you know what? I'm not doing some sort of launch or anything. So I'm making a 32 track album. It's going to grow probably by the time I actually get to a studio. I want to take like a week and find a studio. And I actually found one. I have a sort of like, whenever you can make it happen, we'll see if we can make it happen on our end and come on down. Like, it's one of those situations, but it's so far away. And I don't know. But I have like 32 tracks right now, and it's really just meant for my kids. Like, right. I'd release it because just to see what would happen or whatever, but I wouldn't like put a marketing plan behind it and a budget. You know, I would just release the music, you know, like I just do it like that.
Well, I'll hype
maybe I'd release 10 and if people like it, then I'll find a way to make money off the rest of it.
No, well, I like the two you sent me, so I would sell the shit out of it for you. And what I like about you is in the two tracks that you sent me, the one thing I didn't say on my show, which I probably should have, is you can tell when a lyricist writes genuine lyrics to when it's bullshit. You know, like I know,
like
a guy,
laundry list MCs, we used to call them.
Yeah, like that. Just like they just write words, and like you swear, but you don't swear as a filler. Like there's people. I knew this hip hop artist out of Rexdale. His name was Georgie Porgy. Sick lyricist.
Hey, do you guys like De La Soul and Tribe Called Quest? I know exactly who Georgie Porgy is, man.
You know Georgie Porgy. So he didn't swear. He was all about clean hip hop. And he used to always tell me that if you have to say fuck in a hip hop song, and I swore when I rap, and he used to always say to me, if you got to say fuck, it's because you don't know what to say. He's like, so you just throw fuck in there.
Look what he was selling in Kensington Market. I used to live right on the top of Kensington Market. I would see him like, I saw Georgie Porgy for like a period of 3 years, probably like four times a week, just running into him.
That's
because he lived, he was always on the corner of Kensington or walking around with a bag full of CDs.
Selling his
CD. And his line was, do you guys like hip hop artists like Tribe Called Quest and De La Soul? And so that makes sense because they didn't really swear all that much. They did here and there, but it was hardly at all. You know,
we're trying to prove that hip hop is clean. We're trying to prove that people can flow without sweat. I remember his whole pitch too, right? Say all 6'8" of them or whatever he was going on the stuff. Yeah. So him and I used to talk about hip hop all the time. And what I liked about your stuff, and my wife and I were both saying this, is when you swore, you didn't say it as a filler. Like, there's guys that are spitting tracks, and I'm not going to rap for you, but there's guys that are spitting tracks, and all of a sudden they just say fuck for the sake of it. You know what I mean? And it's like, you didn't know how to end that. You didn't know how to transition from that lyric to the next, so you just put fuck because that was the break, right? And that's what Georgie Porgy used to tell me all the time. Lyricists that just swear to swear don't know how to transition, or that just swear the end or scream the N-word.
It's a crutch. I mean?
Yeah, it is. It's exactly what it is.
Yeah, and a lot of rappers have that. A lot of rappers have crutches that are like different, like, because when I'm on the mic is sort of like freestyle's crutch, right? Like when you're trying to freestyle, like, you know, that you end up saying stuff like that. But yeah, I never really liked this fucking, you know, like those kinds of whatevers. It has to mean something, otherwise what's the point? Like, it could be the frustration of what you're saying. It doesn't have to be like a literal thing, or it could be the literal thing, right? You know, it's just, you know, but it should be used sparingly, I think. Right?
Well, it could be used sparingly, or use Ice Cube's a prime example of a guy who doesn't use it sparingly, uses it a lot, but you know he doesn't use swearing as a crutch. Like, it's a part of his lyric, right?
Sometimes for some rappers, the N-word is a crutch.
Oh, it's a huge, huge crutch. Yeah. I know it's
weird to white guys saying this, but it's I feel like we have a guest pass at least to be able to say this, because like I don't know about you, but I know about you, like, now I do, like, we're both hip hop heads, like you can't and there are artists like, I remember Too Short, I felt like used it as a crutch.
I'll tell you a guy who used it, who swore as a crutch, used that word as a crutch. He's probably known as one of the top 10 rappers of all time. I love him, God bless his soul, love his music. DMX used crutches all the time.
He's a top 10 for you, really?
In my opinion, he's a top 10. I love DMX.
By the way, I should have said before, I kind of hate that. I have a new, it's really annoying, actually, because it's annoying not only to me, but to others. I have a new mantra-ish kind of thing in my head. It's not actually a mantra, but I think of it all the time, where people try to get you to tell you what your favorite thing is. Oh, yeah. Because I'm like, why do we have to rank everything? Why can't things just be different from one another? And we don't really put them in rankings so that I can go to a different fucking restaurant without anyone asking, did you like it as much as this place? And it's just like, it was different. Well, you know, I feel that way about rappers too. Like, I'm not a huge fan of Jin, but you know, who's the best MC? Ain't no best. Top five dead or alive, there ain't no best. Like, and it's like, yes, that's true.
Well, and my wife will often tell you that if you ask whatever day, you could ask me the same question every day. If you could ask me what's your favorite song of all time, I will give you a different answer every single day. Like, it all just depends on the mood I'm in. If I'm in like a really poppy mood, this is going to sound weird based on the conversation we're having, but one of the guys that I love, because to me, it's just my happy, when I'm in a happy, happy mood, I love Flo Prince. Rida. No, oh. Flo Rida is my guy. When I'm like in a peppy pop, like, he's that, I call him pop hip hop. You know what I mean? Like, it's like a pop rap.
I interviewed Flo Rida in Miami once.
Did you?
On camera for my, and it's in my documentary actually too. He was doing a CD release party in 2009.
Is he a good guy? I want to believe he's a good guy.
I mean, it's hard to tell from, like, you know, just like a quick conversation. But his mom was there, right? I met his mom. Flavor Flav was there. I met him. I interviewed him. So it's kind of, it was interesting because I didn't like his music at all, right? Yeah. And it was just when digital sales were really starting to like happen for artists a little bit, and you know, and he had sold like in his first week like 400,000 copies or something. So it was like,
okay,
he was a big artist at the time. But hey, we all have like. We all have, well, I don't know if I do, but no, I'm sure I do. I'm sure I have some. Who do I like that no one else seems to like?
Well, when you're thinking about it, I'll tell you a quick story about Flo Rida.
Yeah, please. Yeah.
So the last concert I went to before COVID was Flo Rida, TLC, and Nelly. And I really only wanted to go there for...
I'm sorry.
I only wanted to go there for Flo Rida. Like, I really didn't want to see anybody else, you know. And I couldn't get anybody to go with me. Nobody would go to the... I finally convinced my wife to come my sister. So I finally convinced my wife. I was calling my boys and I was like, yo, you want... I'm like, I'll buy the tickets. They're like, no. They're like, that's the corniest shit I ever heard. We're not going to that concert. And the funniest part was Flo Rida opened the show and banged out his set. And I looked at my wife and I'm like, hey, we can go
I
home.
Hate Nelly almost more than Nelly would definitely be in my top five for rappers I hate the most. But
yeah. So, and Nelly's set, he played about 45 seconds of every song. And then he just, it was weird because he would just abruptly end it. It wasn't like he'd rap it and kind of like flow into it or go into another song. Like he'd do 45 seconds of song and abruptly end it and then talk to the crowd for 5 minutes. And then. Who's been with me since the beginning? And then 45 seconds of a song and then abruptly stop. And I'm just like,
maybe he was tired or something because I people used to like hide. It happened. So Maestro Fresh West, like in 2010, maybe or something like that, was at the CBC and I was covering it. He did Let Your Backbone Slide, and his mic men were Shad and Chaos. And it was because he couldn't do it anymore, because it's really hard to like get the cadence right, especially if you get the cadence right and you get the vocals right and the flow right and the lyrics right. It's a pretty hard song to do when you're like however old he was at the time, 45 or something like that. I could do it. I'm just going to say for the record, but this, if you're out of practice though, and I've been on an Olympian schedule over the last, like since the pandemic started, I do an hour a day of either writing or rhyming out loud. Like I live in the middle of nowhere. So I can just walk out of my house, walk like 10 yards. My family doesn't hear me anymore. And I can be as loud as I fucking want. And that's nobody awesome. Hears me. Or if someone does, it's some teenager, some hick teenager fucking like 2 miles away that hears the echo. And all of a sudden I become the godfather of his hip hop journey.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
You know, but like, it's a hard thing to do when That's the thing that we were talking about Eminem on your podcast earlier, and about how he's like he's an interesting sort of enigma, not just because of his content, but because the things that he's doing as a 50-year-old is like, oh, that's interesting. He's as old as hip hop itself. But the thing that he does as a 50-year-old, he couldn't do or didn't do when he was in his 20s. And I find that remarkable because when I was young, and I guess probably when you were young too, rappers had a shelf life that was not dissimilar to like great basketball players that played until they were like 38. And then they're not rappers anymore. Like, and I think it was, I don't know what it was. It was probably something record executives told them that they wouldn't be able to, you know, maintain an audience. But I don't know. I think Generation X consumes a lot of hip hop still, from what I understand. You know, like there's a bunch of us out there that you're an older millennial, I think, but like, you know, Generation X, we were there when it kind of like exploded, and it's part of our culture.
Yeah, it's true. And I'm a little bit younger than you, but I am on the older millennial side. I think like by 2 or 3 years or whatever I don't know, depending on who you talk to, the age changes. But yeah, no, I grew up in the thick of hip hop as well. So like you were there for like the pioneers, you know what I mean? Like the one when it really blew up in the 80s and going to the 90s, I came in sort of the late 90s. Like the first album, I knew hip hop. Like the first album I ever owned was Naughty by Nature. That was with the OPP and Ghetto Bastard.
Tretch is one of the illest MCs of all time.
Yeah, so that was one of my first introductions to hip hop. Didn't realize, you know, and again, but even Naughty, as much as I love Naughty by Nature, and that was my first introduction, to me, that was still some of that old school. It could be a little corny, you know, like when you listen like OPP.
I hear what you're saying in regards to the music, the instrumentals, but Tretch as a standalone MC.
Yes, no, even, phenomenal.
Oh, yes. Just crazy. Like, if no, he was a solo artist back then, I think, like, he probably, well, whatever. They had they had pretty good success, you know, not even nature, but, like.
I'm more thrown in the instrumentals. The instrumentals was more, right. And then, you know, the da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, it's like.
It sounded like you were about to go, do-do-do-do-do-do.
It was almost like
that. Which is probably a Jay-Z song or something.
Probably. Yeah. But, you know, so you start going through it, and but I know what you're talking about, the shelf life and how they kind of transition, and I don't know how you felt, but LL changed, right, in the early 2000s, and when he put out, you know, he puts up that track with J-Lo, and then he did that one song, I forget what it's called, and he's under the waterfall, and he's flexing, and he's doing this, and I just remember thinking, like, what the fuck
going
happened?
Back to Cali.
Yeah, Cali. What
the, no, listen, what? LL had a really weird career, okay, so, like, when I'm Bad came out, I actually got bigger and deafer before I got radio, and radio was his debut album. When I got bigger and deafer, when I first heard I'm Bad, yeah. I still think it's dope. Like, it's one of those songs that survived the curse of sounding dated way in the future. There's parts of it that sound dated. The video is certainly dated. It's fucking absurd, right? But the song itself, like, is kind of crazy. Like if you read the lyrics, you're like, ain't nobody right now that is even touching songs like that. Because have you ever looked at, like, the lyric sheet of certain artists, and it's like, oh yeah, chia, oh yeah, chia, like 25 times, and then, like,
yeah,
come on, man, like, I you know, it's not even the same genre, really, right? Like
no, and we talked about that in my show, that LL was one of the guys who really changed hip hop for the better, right? The shorter songs, the cleaner lyrics, the
he was a storyteller too.
He was, like, and his messages
late
were.
One afternoon, realized I was in the world of cartoons. He-Man told me he beat me up because he thought that I looked like a Donald Duck. Like, and then, like, then I hung out with Spider-Man, and he's talking about the Honeymooners, and he's like, and he just did all these TVs. Like, he did concepts. He was a concept guy first.
Ice Cube.
But hold on.
That.
Sorry, I wanted to give you the career kind of trajectory of LL. So he put out those two albums. And then he put out Walking with a Panther, and I think that was the one that Mama Said Knock You Out was on and stuff, and we thought that was dope. And then something happened, and he went really, like, not R&B, but, like, for us, like, raw villains of, like, white kids rebelling in the suburbs and hanging out with black kids, and everyone thinks that we're badasses. Blah, blah, blah. We didn't really dig R&B music, right? Like, it wasn't our thing. And we were like, what's going on? Like, And we weren't savvy enough marketing wise, and if we were, we didn't like it. We were our backpacks were on tight, you know, and so a bunch of us started to hate on L, right? And I kind of had a lukewarm, like, I was like, I like his old stuff, and then we went to see Gangstar at Much Music in, like, 1994 or something. It was when Moment of Truth came out, and I remember that everyone. So Premier is talking, and he's talking about artists that he's worked with, and he says LL Cool J's name, and they booed. They booed Cool J in this, and Cool J, and sorry, and Guru and Premier, and I'm, like, 5 feet away, right? And Guru and Premier look at each other, and they're like, and they just start, they smile and they shake their heads, kind of thing. And Premier's like, don't sleep on LL. Don't sleep on LL. And the crowd still booed, right? Now they're booing their favorite producer just for saying LL's name in a positive light. So there's something that happened. Like, the heads were kind of like, well, you know, I can't fuck with LL anymore. You know, like, he disappointed a lot of people. Like,
well, he did, because he went from that pure hip hop lyricist. He went from that pure, and he, again, the storyteller, similar to Ice Cube, who doesn't get a lot of credit for being a storyteller.
Oh yeah, Ice Cube is one of the greatest West Coast writers of all time. Like,
yeah, and I think people always think of him as, you know, like, no Vaseline and that kind of thing. But he's a fucking, like, if you listen to the, you know, the Kill Night in Will. The Ghetto,
Kill It Will is one of the greatest written albums by anybody. You know, I don't really go to the crate that much, like, for that kind of stuff. Like, I remember when NWA came out. You know, like, we had our hands all over that shit, my friends and I. Like, we sought out that stuff. You know, I was thinking about it the other day about how hip hop touched every single aspect of my culture growing up. And I credit that to being a white kid in the suburbs, because we are, like, the first or second generation And you would be like, you know, you would be around that third, I guess. And if you take a generation as like 25 years or something like that, who, like, we didn't really have a culture. Like, I'm Italian and I'm Dutch, right? Yep. There wasn't any Italian or Dutch shit going on in my house, right? So, but in my parents' house, there was an Italian shit going on in my dad's and Dutch shit going on in my mom's. And it just, for whatever reason, wasn't passed down. I don't know why, it just wasn't. So our culture became the shit that we did. We were like inventing our culture as we went along, kind of thing. And hip hop seemed to touch all of it. I was telling someone the other day that I got into politics because of Do the Right Thing. That movie was like the greatest movie I'd ever seen and really made me kind of like angry at first. And then it made me think and all that kind of stuff. Wait, why the fuck did Mookie throw the goddamn garbage can through the window? It was a dilemma. I was like 13. I was like, I didn't understand any of it. So my introduction to politics was racial politics. And then obviously the soundtrack for that is Public Enemies Fight the Power. Yeah. And so it touched everything. And I was a Michael Jordan guy. I used to wear flight suits or whatever. And even though Michael Jordan actually hates rap music, the brand itself was a total hip hop brand, right? Like it was just the way it was. And then the music and then the writing. And then it just like, it touched everything, man. Like it touched the food that I ate, the fashion, like it just, you know, and I was building my own culture because I didn't get any passed down to me. And I think that's what happened.
Well, it's funny you say that because I did have culture passed out of my household, but it may have been, again, you're probably, I don't even want to say the generation before me. You're just like the age group.
I'm 10 years older than you, so you might as well say it.
Well, you're like the age group before me. You know what I mean? You're like, I don't call it a generation. And you guys kind of laid down that piece because by the time I got to, say, high school, the culture that we had there and the people you hung out with was all based on the music that you listened to.
Really
You had the hip hop crew, you had the punk rockers, you had the metalhead goths, you had the beboppers, you know, like, and people dressed to the music that they listened to. They talked like the music they listened to. And it was all the culture, like our culture that I was ingrained in. I was just, and I'm like you, I ate up the hip hop culture, you know, and a little bit of that spread out to a little bit of reggae and that type of thing. You know what I mean? It came in. I'm like you, I wasn't an R&B guy. Hated when hip hoppers went in, or when guys like Ja Rule, who to me was an R&B guy to the soul, who tried to come into the rap game, you know. And you had
he's another guy I never really got down with. Like I never.
I hate Ja Rule. Yeah. Well, because he's an R&B guy who tried to become a rapper, right? Because he looked like Tupac, and Def Jam thought they could sell him as Tupac. Right?
Didn't like his music. Like it's weird though, because like I know a good songwriting. I was going to say sounds like, but I really want to say looks like, because you can't actually look at a song on paper and tell if it's a good song by words and, you know, if the music and obviously in the structure of where the chorus is, or if there's a bridge or if there isn't, or if it's one long verse and a fucking thing at the end, like you can just tell. And a lot of them had well-written songs, but like, you know, I just wasn't like, I never really understood Lil Wayne. I never understood why people thought, and the weird thing about him was, is that I think his first couple albums are absolute garbage. I really do. And so I wrote him off immediately. And then someone's like, you have to listen to Carter 3. And I was like, okay. And I did. And I was like, and I walked away going, okay, I can see the skill now. I still don't really like it, but I can, at least now I can see where people are coming from when they like him as an artist. There's a lot of cats like that. So if you're like a Nelly, well, not if you're a Nelly fan. If you're a Nelly fan, you just don't know shit. But if you're a Ja Rule fan, actually, same answer.
Yeah. No, it's the same answer. You know, it's funny because I've talked about Lil Wayne before, and I've made this comparison. I always said that Lil Wayne is the Neil Young of the rap world. He's a guy who really doesn't have any talent, but people just love him. That's always because Neil Young. I listen to Neil Young sing, and I'm like, I just don't understand.
Well, I like some of Neil Young's music, so it's hard for me to like. But I get the joke. Like I don't know who I would like. I would use Geddy Lee. You know, like not as a bass player. As a bass player, apparently he's really good. But like as a singer, I don't get why people like Geddy Lee. You know, I don't understand why a cat trapped in a trash compactor sound would actually be appealing to anybody. So I don't.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Did you ever get into any of the, like, Lauryn Hills or Missy Elliott's or any of the female rappers?
I think Lauryn Hill is, if someone put a gun to my head, I'd put her in my top five. And the reason why is because there is no artist that exists that can rap and sing as good as that individual can. And if I were to build a super group, for example, she would be on it. You know, there's no doubt in my mind that she would be there. But I remember listening to MC Light, like when she was putting out new shit in the late 80s kind of thing, or early 90s and stuff. Even Queen Latifah had good shit back in the late 80s and early 90s. Like, there is, like, it was interesting because it was certainly a sexist culture, and you're at a sexist age in a sexist era, early 90s kind of stuff. And, you know, I'm not going to say that you don't know better. And I don't mean, like, to the extreme, but there were songs that were, like, clearly very rapey, you know, and very, like, misogynistic and beat up girls and stuff. And it was funny because I remember listening to the shit, but never thinking to myself, what a great idea, like, or being that way. Plus, I really wanted to have sex, and I know that being mean to girls wasn't really a way to, like, go about dating, right? Like, so you know, but I get it. I don't go back to that kind of music, right? And so, I forget what the question. What
were we even talking about? The female hip hop scene.
Oh, female hip hop. Yeah. So Lauryn Hill is dope. I understand behind the scenes, she's had a lot go on in her life, and I think it's obviously impacted the trajectory of her career and the amount of music that she's put out and everything. But yeah, I'd pick her over almost any rapper. You know, it's interesting. Like, that's why I don't like ranking. Like, how do you say yes to Lauryn Hill but no to Nas, or vice versa? Like, how do you do that?
It's true. And then you look at pioneers. Like, I think Missy Elliott's one of the pioneers in female hip hop. You know what I mean? Like, because she never really converted, right? She stayed her sort of herself, right? And she, where Lil
Kim, she was the best rapper in Fugees.
Yeah,
she was better than Wyclef. She was better than the guy that no one knows or remembers his name, like me right now.
Yeah, I'm the same. You know, but like, so Lil' Kim I liked when she came out, and then she got very R&B-ish. You know what I mean? Like, she moved away from the rap game, and then she's doing shit with other people. I was a big Foxy Brown fan. You know what I mean? I'm a big Foxy Brown fan.
I was a big Foxy Brown fan. I thought she was, like, the hottest, like, thing of all time. Like, there is, like...
She kind of was. She kind of was, but...
There's, like, a weird science. If you're a hip-hop guy, there's a weird science approach to, like, what's the hottest thing you can think of in a woman. And for me, as a MC, I would say that a girl that can rhyme her ass off and obviously looks really fly would be kind of ideal. Like, but then I would imagine living with someone just as, like, punchy when we're busting balls as me, and I don't know if I'd like it or not. there's only so much of that people can take, but yeah, you know, and in this country, Missy Me, you know, she was like the MC Light of Canada, and that's going back a while, and I don't know, like there's a lot of good rappers a lot of female rappers that are dope that really get steered into the pop side of things and the, you know, the sexy pop stuff. And it's kind of unfortunate because I think that they would probably really nail like Christina Aguilera. Who am I thinking of? I always forget their names, which is probably not. It's not sexism. I just forget their names. But, you know, all of the... like, who's the one with the big giant bum and the big fingernails all the time? And she's like,
not J-Lo.
No. Yeah, like, I'm talking like that still puts out stuff.
Oh.
See, this is bad.
Yeah.
Anaconda.
Oh, she's retired now.
Is she retired?
Yeah. Oh, fuck.
So what I mean?
Because she's having kids and she wants to take care of her kids. She did Bang Bang with Ariana Grande. She's, for fuck's sakes, Nicki Minaj. Nicki Minaj.
That's right. That's right. So, okay. There is, I've heard some tracks from Nicki Minaj. I don't think that they're hits. Although, what do I know? Because I don't really pay attention to what's hits nowadays. But I'm just like, the flow that she displays sometimes is relentless and is really fucking nice. The lyrics are just some of that. Some of it is crackerjacky, but some of her shit is fucking dope. So she can nail all three that you need to nail: the cadence, the flow, and the lyrics. But she's so heavily steered into pop that I don't think that people understand that she's probably 100. A really amazing artist. You know,
like, I told my wife way before Anaconda came out, I think it was Starship when was one of her big hits, and I told my wife, if this woman had a producer or came out 10 years earlier when hip hop was still a thing, I said they could have, like, she could have been the Missy Elliott of her time. Like, they could have kept her on the track of rap, because I love her flow. I think she can rap great, but you're right. It's all popified, right? It's all popified.
I think I know the solution, and I'm not even kidding. So I had Classified on last week, and he just did an album called Retrospected. He just did a tour. And it was funny because I asked him, I'm like, why didn't you book any big cities? Like, there was like one semi-big city. It was like fucking, I think it was Regina was the biggest city. And it was all these other enclaves, which is fine. I wasn't like, I was just confused by it. And because he's a big enough artist to do well. And it was because he didn't know how hip hop people would take to him doing an acoustic performance. And I was like, I thought that was crazy, because when I was in the early 2000s, I was part of a collective of people that were in all sorts of music. It was electronic music and hip hop. Was mainly those two, but there was some rock and roll guys in there too. And, you know, it created a lot of fusion. And my act for the year that I did live shows was a dude playing guitar, my Jamaican friend Shane Forrest, Jamaican of Syrian descent, which is interesting, and me. And we would both be sitting down and he'd be playing the guitar and I'd be rhyming. And we did pretty good in the sense that, like, the shows always had a really good amount of people or whatever. And we didn't even put it out, but we had one album, whatever. We weren't really pursuing record deals and all that kind of stuff. We were just doing it, but we did it fairly well. And he was nervous that they wouldn't know how to receive it. And I think he found out when he sold out all of his things and then his album is being nominated for all these awards that especially older millennials and Generation X guys that grew up listening to, like, different types of stuff really kind of like that shit. And I think that you can reset these people that brand themselves as, like, sex icons, like Nicki Minaj, Cardi B, or whoever, and you can turn them into you can reinvent them. And the mechanism is an unplugged show where they sit down and they show you that they're not just rappers that can shake their shit and everything, but they're MCs. And the craft is something that's important to them. And I really think it's underutilized because we're all so into the glossy, you know, I don't even know what to call it. Like, I don't know the adjectives to use anymore. Like, I thought they reached the pinnacle, like, in Christina Aguilera days with, like, you know, with how far they went promoting her as a sex object.
But dirty!
It's like everybody now, except for Lorde.
But
she's probably done that too now. I don't know. You know.
Like, but I totally agree with you because I was looking at the chat and people were saying Cardi B, and I agree. I think Cardi B is a very talented lyricist. I kind of like
super intelligent.
But, no, but I think she's
used to drug guys and rob them. Okay. Yeah.
But I think she's a talented lyricist. I kind of like that combination with her Hispanic background that and the accent that seeps into the rapping.
I like her. I like her annoying voice. I've always liked the annoying voices, like Rosie Perez. I've always loved her voice.
So I think that she could be very good. But you're right. They it's this new. It's weird because a lot of the male rappers today have no personality. They come out monotone. It's every song again. And I was saying this on my podcast. I always swore to God I would never be my dad, right? Who was like, oh, this fucking music today, back in my day. But I listen, my kids are all into it, and some of it's good. Don't get me wrong. Like, there's some good music that comes out today. But I was listening with my daughter one day and I didn't realize the song changed. You know what I mean? I looked at it and I'm like, this is a long song, eh? And she's like, Dad, this is a new song. I didn't even realize the song had changed because it sounded exactly the same.
That's so funny, it's so awful, right?
Yeah, and it's for me, it was, you know, I had really had a oh my God, I'm a dad moment at that when we were listening.
That's not what that is. Maybe. But I mean, I can understand being an adult in like 1990 and being like, oh, what is this? You know, because it to them, it was completely foreign, right? Like, but now it's, but when you grew up with it and you know what good rapping sounds like, it's there's a lot of, like it's just like it's like everything sounds like CNC Music Factory, but the 2022 version or whatever, right? Like,
that's actually, but I want to go back to your acoustic thing because you make a good point, and you actually brought that up on my podcast, and I'm going to turn it around and bring it back to here. You know, we were talking about Eminem, and you were saying like you'd love to just see Eminem on stage with like a guitar player and a piano player and just from an acoustic. Yeah.
Just to, because it's always the music that's front and center for most people. I'm the opposite. I want the lyrics to be good. You know, there are talented singers like opera. Obviously, I don't know what the fuck they're saying, so it's the melody that obviously I listen to more than anything else. If I were to listen to opera, and I do, funny enough, on occasion when I want to reset my brain after my kids or my wife do something that makes me crazy. but it's like the. I lost track of my own thoughts. See how I put myself over the cliff? What were you just talking about? You have to do it again. I'm seeing now.
You're into the lyrics. It's not, you know, we were talking about Eminem doing acoustic stuff.
So seeing a performance from like it would be crazy. Like a dream lineup would be like Rakim and Eminem and Nas and, you know, fucking Lauryn Hill and all these amazing rappers, and Kendrick and J. Cole and whatever. And not him. And just get them all, you know, on a stage, you know, one by one or whatever, or two at a time, and have them just sit and rhyme on a couch, on bar stools, because they'll still rhyme like where you're like, holy fuck, look at them go. But there isn't all of the bells and whistles around the thing that I hold closest to my heart when I think of hip hop, which is the lyricism. And I think, you know, and you know, Hamilton, stuff like that, the play that came, that's kind of in the same universe, I think. And I think like a sit down audience watching people rap, I think there's a whole universe out there that is yet to be discovered, or at least a whole bunch of different, you know, planets that you can place in that universe, because, you know, it's I love it. And it's like acapella, you know, it's like the appeal of acapella are the words in the poetry. And if you add decent behind you music on it, so it's not overpowering everything, then I like it. I'm a hip hop head, but live hip hop, honestly, like 75% of it fucking sucks. Hip hop is tough to pull off live because a lot of rappers don't have good mic control when they move around. They get tired a little bit. That's why they have mic men to hit the line on the kick, or at least that's the way it was back in the day. And you know, the performance is hard to appreciate in places like an arena if you're not, and even if you are, but if you're not really close to the stage. And in little clubs, the shouting in the mic stuff is just hard unless your system is perfectly equalized or whatever, right? Like, So I'm not a fan of live hip hop most of the time.
So I think it was probably 2004. I saw the Baby Blue Crew, which was basically Wu-Tang with Redman, and somebody else, right? But that was basically what it was. And then, you know, minus a couple guys here and there. And as I told you, like method, I know I'm the same as you. I don't like saying I have an all-time favorite.
Yeah.
But if you were to put a gun in my head and say you can only listen to one artist the rest of your life, for me, it would be Method Man. I love Method Man. Like, it's just, he's so unique in his delivery and I love Method Man. And I have never been as impressed at a live show as I was watching Method Man live. Like, it's
really,
he didn't run out of breath. Like, he just, like, he, and they had hype men on the stage, but he could have went without hype men. Like, that's what I'll say. Where Redman, who we know is the energetic guy, was exhausted a song and a half in. You could see it. Like, he was burning out. Because
of the weed.
It has to be. But so it's funny. I was reading something a couple weeks ago. I was reading it, and it was ranking like the top 50, you know, hip rappers of all time, or groups. It was all about hip hop, right?
And is that the Rolling Stone one?
No, it wasn't the Rolling Stone. Oh. It was like some off-brand one. But yeah. I laugh so hard because Method Man was listed three times. So Wu-Tang was number three. The combination of Method Man and Red Man were like number eight or like number nine. And then Method Man was by himself at number 12. And I was he just listed him three times on the top 50 list. It's amazing.
That's hilarious. That means that someone's a big fan. But
List Challenges. That's what it is. I don't know if you've ever seen the website List Challenges. People actually vote. That's how it goes up and down the row. Yeah.
See, it's 2 minute. When it's minute, that's a perfect example. Why I don't like it. Like who are these jokers voting for? Does one of these rappers have probably like some boiler room operation of bot processing, whatever? Like, you know, and it's just too subjective. But
you know what though, if I listed the top 10, I'm on it right now. I bet you.
That I'd agree?
Yeah, I don't know. Actually, it's very commercial. So, number one, yeah. Tupac. Number two, Ice Cube.
You already lost me.
Number three, Notorious B.I.G.
See, I don't put either of those rappers. Their significance in the culture is, to me, totally different from their catalog.
I agree.
Especially Biggie's. Like, you know.
I agree. They're again, that's why I said it's very commercial. Wu-Tang's up there. As you know, I totally agree with that. I love Wu-Tang. Yeah. NWA is there.
Yeah, see, that's another one. Like, their catalog is what, two albums? You know, like, yeah. Really, do you count it after Ice Cube leaves, really?
No, you can't. They got Nas at number six. No, yeah, number six.
See, who's ahead of Nas? Give me the top five. So it's Tupac.
And it's NWA and Ice Cube. So he's got two spots. Wu-Tang, and then Tupac and Biggie.
See, so isn't that hilarious in a way? Because this is why I hate it. Because first of all, Wu-Tang is a collection of like a dozen artists, and then it's Nas. So you're like, I know Capadonna isn't even 10% Nas. So it's like, how do you fucking like, you know, how do you even do that? So it's weird to me. I hate it. I fucking hate it so much, the ranking thing. Like, I would rank, like, best West Coast top five, best East Coast top five, because my top five would be all East Coast. So it'd be difficult. So, like,
I wanted to ask you that because you were ingrained in the hip-hop culture, and I got into rap right, like, at the tail end of this. You know what I mean? Like, I think that when I started buying albums, like, I bought Puff Daddy, All in the Family, when I'll Be Missing You came on it. So the East Coast-West Coast war, right? Again, I missed... I missed a lot of the East Coast, West Coast war, right? Like, there was just, it was ending as I came into it. Did that influence who you listened to? Did you get wrapped up in it? Because I know guys who are a few years older than me, they were totally, I know guys who won't listen to Tupac still. I know guys who won't listen to Big, like, they won't listen to Tupac, Dre. They won't listen to any of the West Coast guys. And I know guys that will only listen to these. Did you get wrapped up into the East Coast, West Coast stuff?
I sort of did, but it was different for me because, that happened like I was already 10 years deep, right? Like I wasn't, and so my tastes were clearly East Coast, like anyways, right? Okay. There was I probably showed some immaturity or something like in like nine, you know, when I was still in high school, where I spent like a little bit of time using offhanded remarks like "fuck West Coast music," blah, blah, blah. Like I probably did that like a bunch of times. But that went away pretty quickly. Like as soon as I graduated high school, probably like I never thought. Well, before that, I don't know how many years or even if it was years, but I quickly learned that that was stupid because I remember thinking at the time like, but I don't want to stop liking NWA. Like, why would I do that? That seems like a really stupid thing to do. I actually like Snoop Dogg. I like I like Dre. This doesn't make any sense to me. I didn't like Too Short. And I didn't like stuff like that. Like, I thought that was lame. And, and then I snapped out of that really quickly because there's a lot of good West Coast shit, right? Like, it's, you know, but to have like NWA, in a top five and Nas like number six and like, you know, Method Man on lists three times and stuff, it just seems too weird to me. If you take everyone as a solo artist, you can't do Wu-Tang as a group against a solo artist. They have to be a group. And as a group, they're certainly the best hip-hop group I think of all time. I would put Gangstar probably number two if I had to make a list. You know, I would put like NWA probably three or four. You can't put like Fuji, Public Enemy. Oh, Public Enemy would probably be like my number two now that I think of it. But you know, Boogie Down Productions would be there. It's just the way like I'm programmed. I can't I can't rank anymore. It seems weird to me. Like the gun to my head would be Nas, largely because he had a song where he was the gun called "I Gave You Power," right? Like, he's a dope lyricist, and you know, you have to give him respect. Illmatic is largely considered the best hip hop album of all time, and I happen to believe that's the correct assumption, because it from top to bottom, and you had the significance of when it came out, like, you know, was it 91, 92, whatever it was, when it came out, was like, once you got your copy, you were like, it was like a movie. You put your headphones on, your Walkman or whatever the fuck you had, and you lie down, and I just listened to it, and I probably listened to it like 7 or 8 times. It was a fucking movie. He painted a picture, and I had never heard someone do that the way that he did it, with the style and delivery, and the way that he painted the picture was like nothing I'd ever heard. Like, there were Rakims of the world, and they were like other storytellers, but you know, Nas was a first of his kind, and I don't know if he's ever been duplicated. Isn't that crazy? That's all the best ones are. They're just totally standalone talented rappers, right?
Yeah, I totally agree, because it is. And I think that, and again, and I put in the way you talk about Nas is the way I can talk about Method Man, right? Like, because that's my guy, and everybody's going to have their arguments here and there, and I respect them both, right? So I don't even want to have an argument about it, right? But it's taste. For me, it's Method Man's voice. Like, there's just the uniqueness of Method Man just has always spoke to me. But yeah, it's weird though, because you have those guys who stand alone, you can't touch. And I think Meth is one of them. Nas is one of them. I think Eminem's one of them. You know what I mean? There's never going to be another Eminem. There's going to be people.
It's funny always talking about Eminem, because we we're almost programmed to understand that there's a lot of Eminem critics out there. So I do this all the time. I want to be able to like, okay, well, no. Like, I preamble everything when I talk about Eminem, but straight up, let's do instead of best rappers, let's do characteristics of a rapper and who's the best at those things. He's clearly the best writer of all time.
Yeah,
it is not even close. The volume, the amount, his catalog is so big. The amount of rhymes that man has written that are not just like abundant, but just the quality of them and the structure behind them are just insane.
Did you ever hear the Akon story about Eminem?
I think I just heard it the other day as I watched a compilation of rappers talk about him, but go ahead.
I probably watched the same compilation the other day. So Akon was talking about how Eminem made him look at the business differently, and they were doing a track together, and Akon shows up at like 3 p.m., and Eminem's already there.
Oh, yeah.
And they start laying on the track, and at 5 o'clock, Eminem's like, okay, I'm going home. I'll see you tomorrow. He's 9 o'clock. He literally goes to the studio 9 to 5, takes his lunch at his hour lunch at 1 o'clock, and then comes back and 5 o'clock he packs it up. Like, he treats rap like it's his job. And I love that. That was so funny. I was like, I just think like if anybody's going to do that, it was probably going to be Eminem. You know what I mean? Like,
But then it makes sense like that he would do that, because it's probably the only way that you can maintain a skill level, because it's, you know, it's not like singing. It really isn't. It's not like singing for a bunch of reasons. One is, you know, it's more, unless you're like a punk rocker or something, or death metal guy or whatever, it's probably a lot more tiring. Just the vocal part alone. I'm not saying rockers don't like walk around and Mick Jagger the fuck out of everything sometimes, but like, but just on its own, it's really hard to do. But the way that like you have to also pay really close attention to the lyrics. Like, if you're an aging rocker, you can get by with other people writing the fucking songs for you. And like, you know, and you do. And not that ghostwriting doesn't exist, but to a large extent, it doesn't exist for a lot of the great ones. And it's tough to maintain. It's like exercising. And if you don't write rhymes and rap consistently, you start to lose your skill level. It starts to deplete the writing and the rhyming. And that's why you don't see a ton of Rakim shows, because he's not probably, well, maybe Rakim is a bad example, but you know what I'm saying? Like, there's Big Daddy Kane. I don't think he's done shit in a long time. But if he maintained, he'd probably still be really dope. So Eminem might be the first one that I can think of. Jay-Z's probably actually in this category as well. As guys, when they were like in their 40s and wrecking shit, more than the young guys were as far as skill level goes. And I think that's just a testament to their hard work, right?
Like, no, I totally agree. And then there's some guys out there that you just wonder, like, what if? Like, Mace is always a guy to me. It's like, because he just gave it up. Right?
I hate
like
Mace.
You don't like Mace?
Not particularly, no.
Oh, I
thought he was
Mace
one of those
guy.
Monotone guys. Like, I
again,
just never liked this.
So what you'll start to see a trend with me is voice has a lot to do with my who hits my I like to listen. And Mace again is one of those voices that just resonates.
Really? That surprises me. That surprises me a little bit.
Yeah, I'm a big voice guy because I find a lot of rappers can sound the same from a voice sounding. They might be different lyricists and how they flow, but their voices sound the same. And I always found like Mace. He was almost like the originator of mumble rap. You know what I mean? What they have today, which is just
you're not selling it.
No. But you know what I mean? Like it, just the way he had no punctuation on his words. Like everything kind of just mumbled off. Like he would be rapping normal and it kind of mumble
so
off.
So you don't like that though?
I don't know, but there's something about his voice that always captured my attention. The same like Method Man. Like there's better rappers than Method Man. I can say that. You know what I mean? I think he's great, but there's better rappers than Method Man.
Different rappers. Come on, Ray. Start the revolution.
but when you come on this
walk with me where we don't rank anything. Go ahead. Sorry.
No. What I'm saying, there's better rappers, but when you combine how well he can rap with the voice, that's why Method's the top of my list, right? For me,
right.
Because that's how it feel like. If I had to, it would be Mac 10 was another guy. I loved his voice. You know what I mean?
Guru like, was like that for me.
Guru?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Guru from Gangsta. Like, I mean, and his songs again, yep. Like he was a pretty good writer though. Like he, you know, like Ex-Girl to Next-Girl, I think is one of the great, like what would you call that? Like a love tragedy song, I guess, or something like that. Breakup song, whatever. You know, and, but you know, he's also paired up with the greatest golden era producer hands down of all time, which is DJ Premier. So it's probably Guru probably owed a lot to Premier, but also, you know, like he went and did his own thing with Jazzmatazz. A lot of like real hip hop heads didn't like Jazzmatazz, but a lot of the grittier heads didn't like it because they felt that Guru kind of phoned in the lyrics. And to a certain extent they were telling the truth there, but also he just wanted to have a different experience, right? Like he was working with like Wynton Marsalis and like Donald Byrd and all these amazing fucking jazz artists. So he wanted, I think, the instruments to be front and center. But I know what you mean. Like, he had a song called It's Mostly the Voice. You know, so yeah, I know exactly what you mean. There's a few unique cats like that. Like, go ahead.
50. I'm actually not the biggest 50 Cent fan. You know what I mean? Like, I'm really not. But I love his voice. You know what I mean?
Like, I like watching 50 Cent interviews more than I like listening to his music.
He's a smart cat. He really is. For a guy who
I love
I
the street
dumb,
level kind of intelligence that he applies to like
to business
and media, you know?
Yeah.
Like I like that.
Well, and again, and see, that's the thing. Like, and I know when I bring up, I don't even know what his name is now, but I'll call him Puff Daddy. When I bring him up to people, especially real hip hop heads, I get the eye rolls, right? But I'm not talking about.
I just stopped myself.
No, but I'm not talking about Puff Daddy, the rapper or producer or whatever, but you know, Puff was really one of the first guys from the hip hop culture to turn it into a billion-dollar business. You know what I mean? Like the Sean John line and all this and that, and understood where to make it. And a lot of guys,
second. He was the second. Russell Simmons was the first.
Sorry, yes, Russell Simmons was number one. I'm not a big Russell Simmons fan, so I'm not a big Puff.
Def Jam,
either.
Yeah, you got to hand it. I mean, Public Enemy, Run DMC, and LL Cool J is a pretty good fucking lineup. You know?
No, it is, but it's. You know, so, but it's, I always respected Puff Daddy because he made money from the hip hop culture. You know what I mean? Like he was a guy that was like, I'm not just going to be here for my shitty rhymes and surrounding myself with big names like, you know, Biggie. He's like, I'm going to make money off of this as well. So I always had a respect level for him.
Well, also once he got Pac out of the way, you know,
yes. Nothing to do with it.
It's so funny. Like, actually, there's a good series about that. And it's from the perspective of the detective who was like, who had other problems and stuff. But it's a, I can't remember how many episodes it is, but it's a really interesting series because it does take a lot of the stuff that did happen in real life and kind of make you wonder, you know, it's a weird, like, I think the person I hate most in hip hop history is probably Suge Knight.
Well, yeah.
Like, honestly, like I know that he could beat me up, right?
Beat you up. He'll hang you from a window. Let's get
the
mystery
out of the way. I'm pretty sure Suge Knight can beat me up even to this day, even if he's in his fake wheelchair as he cries.
If you want to hear the greatest story in the world, listen to Vanilla Ice telling the story of Suge Knight hanging him over a railing over at a hotel. It's the greatest story in the world.
He said
it
wasn't true, I thought.
No, he came out and talked about it. He told the story. It's one of the greatest stories that I've ever heard.
And then he had to give him like $1 million or something, didn't he?
Or something, or rights to song. I can't remember what it was, but just, yeah. Yeah. It's,
you know what? Here's the thing. And this is interesting, actually, because there were hardly any white rappers back then. There was like 3 or 4, right? Yeah. And they were like Everlast. Everlast was like doing his thing with Ice-T's Rhyme Syndicate in like 1987, I think. Song... Fuck Everyone. Do you remember that song?
Yeah.
And the rhythm. Talking about the rhythm. The rhythm. And anyways, it's kind of cheesy now. It doesn't really stand the test of time. There are some good lyrics in Fuck Everyone. I got Tipper Gore protesting my lyrics. Fuck that bitch. I don't need a clearance. See, that sounded like a good lyric to me at the time, but I wouldn't say that anymore, right? Like, it's an interesting thing. But then there was just like MC Search, who I liked in Third Base, but then on a personal level, we did this business thing once, and I don't like him at all as a human being. But he ripped me off $5,000. He was a rep at a liquor company, and I approached him to get a sponsorship. It's supposed to be a $10,000 cash sponsorship for this thing in Miami. And he gave me $5,000, and I thought it was like, oh wow, I got $5,000 to put towards my event or whatever. And then I found out 3 months later at my event that this other rep comes up to me like, so we you did a lot for the $10,000 we gave you. I was like, you fucking
motherfucker,
fucking bastard, took my fucking like. And he probably got like a bonus on their end. Actually, no, probably not. They're giving money away, so he's probably, but he's making his salary. Yeah. He just took my money, you know, like, I don't know, you know, he was an asshole. And who are the other white rappers? Then it's like Vanilla Ice, right? And then if you're a white rapper like me, you had to live in that black hole between Vanilla Ice and Eminem, right? Because everyone made fun of white rappers after that. But well, here's the thing.
Especially when House of Pain got big.
Yes, yes. and there were a few exceptions, obviously. But the whole Vanilla Ice thing, what people may not realize is that when Ice Baby came out, the ghetto was rocking that song. They were playing that song. They were remixing the fuck out of that song and playing it on all these underground radio stations, like before it really hit the radio and after it blew up. And then when like the media and the crowd at large found out that he was white, and people started to get turned off a little bit. It was just the kids that really kind of liked him. And then the hip hop heads took their hands off them. But make no mistake, there's hip hop heads that are like, die in the wool, backpack on as tight as possible until your arms are blue, purists that were like bumping Ice Baby to remixes and loving the fuck out of it before he became whack or whatever. So,
then he started recording metal albums when he was in his like 40s.
Yeah. Yeah, I only like that one song, actually. I didn't like anything else he put out. I hated when he danced. I hated his hair. I became a hater rather quickly because I was a white rapper, and I fucking just, that guy's going to rap? Well, oh, hey, Vanilla Ice, you're going to rap? Like, I have heard that 1,000 times. Like, and it was a hard life.
He
probably
was
made
in,
you a better writer. You
know? He was in Ninja Turtles 2, Secret of the Ooze. Yeah, did you like Scarface?
The fucking Running Man with the turtles.
He
go
did.
Turtles go, turtles go. Right.
Did you like Scarface?
I did. Yeah, I did.
So he's a guy that
I don't know his album. Like, I don't know his track listings by heart and everything. But like, yeah, I like his voice too. He's got another one of those voices.
He does. Again, and you're starting to see the trend. It's just the guys with the unique voices. Even the women. Like, again, so I'm a big Missy Elliott fan. You know what I mean? It's a very unique voice, right? Yeah. That comes out, and you know, I would also argue that Lauryn Hill had a unique voice as well. So I was a big Lauryn Hill fan. So it's
we should do something like this more often. Because I know a lot of guys that like live in areas where they don't really have anyone to talk to talking about all their friends are like, dude, the people that I know here are country music and rock. And by the way, I loved alternative music growing up. I loved Nirvana and I loved all that shit as well. So I wasn't just like exclusive, but yeah. I know you got a hard out, but
yeah, have me back.
So I'd love to come talk. Short notice as well.
Love to come talk more hip hop and rap with you. We only scratched the start. We talked very mainstream. We can get a little bit deeper the next time.
Oh, dude, we can go. We can go places, Ray. We can do this.
We can do it.
All right, buddy. Ray Rice, thanks, who's got next podcast? I appreciate your time, buddy. Thanks very much.
Thanks, buddy. Take it easy.
That was fun, guys. That was fun. I hate when a guest cancels and I can't fill the slot. That's why you guys see like, oh, no black ball tonight. It's like Monday or Tuesday. Sometimes I'll be like, I'll put out the promo at like 6:30. And then like 7:45, it's like, oh, yeah, I can't. Yeah, I have this dinner. And it's always, by the way, the names that aren't that big. Go figure. The smaller the name, the more the cancellation. I guess, which is a sort of sign of unprofessionalism. Tomorrow is the triumphant return of Casual Fridays. I will be on edibles. I will not be on mushrooms. And yeah, I'm going to do it, but I think what I'm going to do is shrooms once a month. I'll do my reset, my shrooms reset on a Casual Friday once a month. So look out for that, brain cells. And then that's it. Sam G is going to be on next week, Monday or Tuesday. And we'll see you tomorrow on Casual Friday. We'll see you next time on Black Ball. Thanks. Black Ball.
Hi, I'm Steve Yerko.
And I'm Tara Sands. Now available from Maji Media is our new podcast, 4Kids Flashback. 4Kids is the company who brought you the English dub of Pokemon in the late 90s and so many other shows like Yu-Gi-Oh!, Shaman King, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Kirby, the infamous One Piece dub, and so many more.
We'll be talking to the people who worked at 4Kids. Actors, directors, writers, editors, producers, engineers, you get the point. And hopefully get the answers to questions both you and I have about the company.
I actually worked there as a voice actor on some of the shows.
And I was a kid watching the shows and remember way more than Tara does.
And thank God for that. Steve is actually a professional storyboard artist, which gives some really unique insights into anime and animation. Subscribe today wherever you get your podcasts. That's the number 4Kids Flashback.
Do, Did, Will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first 5 episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all 3 of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. And Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.